November 3rd, 2024, and I'm naming the date because it is, what's the word? It's a date to acknowledge. In 2 days, we'll have the election. And this election is bringing a lot of anxiety, grief, anger, fear, and it's been preceded, and the election pre-election process has been preceded by violence, the verbal violence, and the which comes from the mind of violence. The words can't come out without with a mind that is proliferating in that way, that then shapes what comes out of our mouth and shapes our action. And so, we are living in a time of more mental and verbal proliferation of anger and violence and fear, right? Because the violence comes from fear, ignorance. So I wanted to share today. So I did a lot of looking into the scriptures, the teachings, the Dharma, because the teachings of Buddhism really, it's so comprehensive. It's not just because I'm in love with this Dharma. It's because it's really has a teaching, at least one, if not several, for everything. And so I want to run through, we'll mindfully jog through in the time we have a framework for how the Buddha, in his wisdom and love for society, for people, for all beings, offered us a way to be in the world. And I think as we share this, we'll see how and where we can participate, maybe even more fully, in how we co-create this society that we're living in. Because the Buddha was very intentional from the how do we behave individually to how does a monarch, a ruling monarch, behave within his kingdom. Something there for everyone. How do we take care of poverty? How do we treat criminalization? All these things are there in the Dharma. And there's a lot of references to different teachings, and I'll share that with you if you like. Sometimes people don't want that, and that's totally cool. So what I'm saying here is the Buddha provided us a moral compass for this life. Totally. We don't really have to wonder, oh, I wonder if there's a teaching about this. Yes, there's a teaching about it. And at any moment that you wonder, I'm gonna say this, Google it. Just because, it's really there. And you always Google the word that you're looking for, and Buddhism behind it. Because then it'll connect it. It'll base it in Buddhism. And then I'm always in our Sangha email. You all have it. Please reach out if there's something like, what did Buddha say about this? Can you tell me a sutra that has something about this? I'm always happy to go look it up also and share it. Because the Buddha said, basically, that this is how we want to live our lives. He wasn't shy about really teaching this is how we live our lives, to be in community, love each other, to take care of each other. And how we live with ourselves individually and within our smaller community is how we live in the larger community. So basically, we form the society we live in through our own individual thoughts, our speech, and our action. This is, it proliferates outward. Maybe we think it doesn't have an effect, and yet it does. And we know that. I think we are all here because we know that, because we influence the societal formation. And so what I think we're called upon is to look more closely on how we are in society, how we are in ourselves. So we always focus a lot on ourselves, and then because we know that that goes and rolls out into society. So there's a teaching that where I don't remember which monk asked the Buddha, who are you going to appoint to take your place after you pass? Or who are the elders in the community after you pass? Who are they going to appoint? Which monk, which Arahant, right? Or Bodhisattva, which enlightened person who's been your disciple? And the Buddha said, yes, there has to be a standard of authority in how we live our lives, but it's not going to be a person. It's the Dharma. The Dharma is the guide, not the Buddha. So our code of discipline in how we live our lives, it comes from the Dharma. So this idea that there's this, renowned leader that's going to guide us into our liberation and our freedom, it's not so. The teachings clearly state that the Dharma guides us because they are the teachings of the Buddha. And so the Buddha knew he was going to be around, and he also didn't want us worshiping relics. I mean, we can use relics to keep in mind something. Yes, this reminds me of this, but it's not a worshiping of a relic. That the Dharma is really what guides us. In our tradition of Plum Village, we're practicing with the five mindfulness trainings. In the next year, we'll do a training on the five mindfulness trainings for anyone in BBMC who would like to receive the transmission of the five mindfulness trainings. So we'll basically, you could say that's our code of discipline. So the Buddha also established a code of discipline for the monastics, Ipatimokkha, which are a set of over 200 basically rules or guidelines or trainings. We don't want to really get too caught up. Sometimes we can get restricted, like, oh my gosh, more stuff. A lot of these suggestions or trainings or guidelines are really just how to be a nice person in society. Don't kick your friend, right? Don't talk behind someone's back. Speak with kindness, and many other things, right? There's 200, over 200. I will say there's more than 200 for, there's over 300 for the nuns. So I would be, I think, negligent in not naming that. But we're not going to get into that today. There's not time. Okay, so there's this idea that there is a standard of authority. There's a moral compass of how we're going to live, and that it's the Dharma. There's Dharma. And so why did the Buddha feel it necessary to establish these kind of trainings, what we use the five mindfulness or the 14 mindfulness trainings? So he lists 10 points for training, because he was always questioned, well, why do you have this? Why is this here? Why is that there? Why do we need these? Of course, the time then is the same here. Why do I need to follow these things? It was no different, right? People pushing back, right? We think we're the only ones that push back. No, everybody's been pushing back since we can remember. Okay, so 10 reasons, and I'll say them. And again, I have them. It's on this document, so I can share it. So, for the well-being of the community, right? So listen to them. They're very practical. They're not like. They're so everyday life, right? For the well-being of the community. So we're going to have training guidelines so that the community's well-being is intact, right? For the ease of the community, that's the second one, right? So people are like comfortable and they're rested in the community. They're not with anxiety the way that many of us are living in the world today with anxiety, right? Because we're not following this moral compass. So we have to reestablish these ways of being in intentionality in our communities, right? The ones we are every day negotiating for keeping uncooperative persons in check, right? So it's not, sometimes people, I think, romanticize this practice and the people in the practice. But there's always been people who are not cooperative within any community, any intentional community, even non-intentional community, right? So one of the reasons for the disciplines, the codes of discipline, is to keep the person who is a bit uncooperative in check, to help them stay guided and grounded. The fourth one, so that well-behaved participants can dwell at ease. So, because we have different people with different intentions, even in an intentional community, a community that comes together with an intention around a mission or purpose, there are still different. What would you say? Degrees of how intentional we're in that community get together. And you all know this in your own spaces that you are intentionally in, right? And then these two are very specific to Buddhism, right? For the restraint of the influxes, the asavas or ashavas, depending Pali or Sanskrit. These are the things that keep coming into us that keeps us maybe in desire and craving, right? The sense pleasures, craving for a continued existence, and of course, ignorance. And there are others, but these are usually the big three that gets absorbed in us, gets pulled into us. And then also then affects how we are. So it's the restraint of these in this life and in future lives, right? Those are two of the points. So we're practicing with these trainings to restrain them in this life, and also because we believe in the effect of karma to help in future lives, right? Compassion for ourselves in the future life is basically what that is. So that non-believers gain faith. Again, we're all bringing who we are into the space. You all know that. So these trainings help folks gain faith for those who don't have that faith. And then what it does, it increases the faith for those who do have it. Non-believers gain faith and believers increase their faith because we keep this code of discipline, this moral compass, for the continuation of the good dharma, right? Remember, it keeps coming back to this dharma. We take refuge in the dharma, so we want to continue the dharma. And the last one is for promoting discipline, something that a lot of us cringe on. I know I can say that even sometimes when I hear this word discipline outside of the spiritual community, it can trigger things for me, right? And yet, what we're acknowledging is that we all need that moral compass. We all need to be reminded, and having trainings, having schedules. Really, they're very helpful. What I shared this earlier about what I'm bringing in was this greater realization that in times like this, where the collective consciousness is very heavy, there's a lot of anxiety and fear. There's like a higher vibration in the collective consciousness right now that can really, unknowingly, we're like, why don't I want to do what I usually do? Why am I unsettled? What's going on? Having a schedule, which is a discipline really, and sticking to it. When the mind is getting pulled because of the collective mind, having a schedule and following it, I feel in the next month, it's going to be really important that we maintain our schedule. When I say that, I mean our practice schedule, whatever that is for you. I'm not saying what it needs to be, I'm just saying whatever your practice scheduling is, really sticking to it. Yeah, because right now we're in a time where we're going to be pulled off very easily. There's so many impingements. The news is going to be analyzing from the top to bottom. This every angle is going to be analyzed. And so, how are we going to practice with that continued bombardment and infringement, really, on our calm and our peace of mind? I'm not saying stick your head in the sand. I am not saying repress. I'm saying wisdom here is called for. And the Dharma is about wisdom. Dharma is about love. Dharma is about understanding so that we cut through the ignorance and see clearly. So these are the 10 points for training, why it is that we need these guidelines. Okay. And then we're going to just mention things that come up for us individually. Disputes over the discipline, disputes over how we do or do not stay in this practice of our training, right? And this, while we are, the practice is about us learning together. And so one day when I'm really tired, I may not be having my mindfulness. And so I might do and say things that aren't as mindful. And I have a sibling in the practice that points it out to me. That's really helpful. It becomes more helpful and doesn't lead to ill being or feeling attacked when we stay always in practice. We stay always in reflection. So the person who is sharing something about, sibling, maybe what about this, or sibling, what about that? Be in reflection before we share that out. And same for the person who is being helped, that they also are invited into reflection in order to be able to see deeply that maybe that's, I need to listen and see what's there to be taken and what's there to be left. Yeah. So this need to continually be in self-reflection is really very important right now. And again, we're in a time when we're going to be seeing a lot of things that we may agree with or may disagree with. And how do we take care of that? How do we not ignore it? And how do we also address it in a way where we're coming from a place of self-reflection, not a place of anger? Because that's the other one, the anger. So anger is one of the emotions and the that's really taught a lot about in the sutras. There's so many sutras on taking care of anger, but we don't have time to get into that. But I do think having some time in the future to just look at several of the sutras that teach about anger would be helpful. What I gather is wisdom and patience. as the antidotes to anger, wisdom and patience. There's a really beautiful, this for me, the one that really elucidates anger the most around wisdom. And there's so many that this is just one of my favorite. Samyutta Nikaya, Samyutta Nikaya 7.2. And again, it'll be in this document, where the Buddha is abused with words. Someone basically tells him off, so to speak. And then the way the Buddha responds is he gives this simile. He says to the person who is saying these abusive things to him, he says, if someone goes into your, no, if, yeah, if you offer someone food, a snack or something, and they don't receive it, they don't take it, who does the snack belong to? And the person says, well, it's still my food because the person didn't receive it. And the Buddha said, same so with your words. I do not take it on. I do not receive your words. Therefore, they're still yours. They're not mine anymore. They're not mine. They never were, and they won't be mine because I don't receive it. I will read this part for you. The Blessed One said to him, what do you think, Brahman? Do your friends and colleagues, kinsmen and relatives, as well as guests, come to visit you? Yes, they do, Master Gotama. Do you then offer them some food or a meal or a snack? I do, Master Gotama. But if they do not accept it from you, then to whom does that food belong? If they do not accept it from me, then the food still belongs to me. So too, Brahman, I do not abuse anyone, do not scold anyone, do not rail against anyone. I refuse to accept from you the abuse and scolding and tirade you let loose at me. It still belongs to you, Brahman. It still belongs to you. Brahman, one who abuses his own abuser, who scolds the one who scolds him, who rails against the one who rails at him, he is said to partake of the meal, to enter upon an exchange. But I do not partake of your meal. I do not enter upon an exchange. It still belongs to you, Brahman. It still belongs to you. So this is the wisdom as the antidote, right? So we can become angry because we eat the meal that is being served to us. But if we don't eat the meal, we're not partaking of that offering. Then the anger might rise up, but it won't stick. It'll move through because the meal didn't come inside, you see? So this is wisdom. This is the wisdom of taking care, or one of the wisdom ways of taking care of anger. The other one that is also very much always shared is patience as an antidote to anger. I think that's one too that also gets under our skin. There are many, many teachings on patience as the way to take care of anger. We've talked about some here. My favorite of the patience one is the patience over punishment. When someone is saying mean things, abusing, scolding, etc. And in this sutra, the one of the gods, Sakka, is not responding to another god that who is calling him all kinds of names from, that is not nice. And he's questioned, why don't you respond? Is it out of fear? Is it out of weakness? Are you a weakling for not responding to these abuses, to these threats? He's asked, why do you endure him so patiently, listening to his harsh words? And the response from Sakka is, it is neither through fear nor weakness that I am patient with Vipassiddhi. How can a wise person like me engage in combat with a fool? I myself think this alone is the way to check the fool. When one knows one's foe is angry, one mindfully maintains one's peace. So again, you see, it's what it's pointing to is it's an engagement. It's like the previous one. It's how do we engage? How do we receive what is being offered to us? Do we eat the food or not? Yeah. And it's not because we're weak, it's not because we're fearful, it's because we are self-reflective people. We are practitioners. This is what we do. We practice with mindfulness and awareness. We notice what is happening in our mind and our body. That's why we do all these meditations, to notice what is there and what is not there. And as we get to know ourselves very well, we see in that moment what is arising. We are in refuge with the Dharma, our moral compass, that helps us to see. The lens, our lens is the Dharma. Everything is reflected through the Dharma. And when we see how we're in that moment, is it in line with the Dharma or is it not in line with the Dharma? And the last part I'd like to share is there are also many sutras on, I mentioned at the beginning, how do you establish an equitable society? And the Buddha had a lot to say about this. War breeds enmity, right? There is no such thing as hurting a foe and think that person is not going to retaliate. To think like that is really not wise. There's a way to rule, even in these monarch ways of governing. We always, the ruler says, we always provide for the welfare of the people. Always. And that when you don't provide for the welfare of the people, it breeds contempt, it breeds poverty, and poverty breeds criminality. And so if you alleviate poverty, it then follows that you alleviate criminality, you alleviate everything that comes from poverty. So in the early Buddhist texts, there is so much that speaks about poverty as the ground of the way a society will either live in peace or live in conflict. And so the righteous monarch, the wheel-turning monarch, who the Buddha is equating with the wheel-turning Buddha, right? The wheel-turning monarch is the one who is advised by the Dharma, as well. And if the wheel turning monarch is advised by the Dharma, then they will follow along to assure that they provide for the welfare of the people. Now, this is the same. We're talking about the Dharma in Buddhism because this is a, we're practicing within the teachings of Buddhism. But if you look at different spiritual traditions, it really comes back to the same thing. We take care of those most in need. The last will become first. It's not unique to Buddhism. So we're in a time now where we want to replenish our moral compass in a very, very intentional way. We are dealing with governments that are not wheel-turning monarchs. And the reminder that neither one of our political candidates are wheel-turning monarchs. And now I want to refer to a non-Buddhist reading of this of why we vote. Why we vote. So we're not voting for a wheel-turning monarch. Nope. Either one of our two main candidates are that. There's this wonderful piece that I will share with you about voting like a radical, even if you're not a radical. Knowing that we're voting for someone who, as movement builders for justice, we have a greater likelihood of holding accountable. Yeah. So the movement doesn't end here at this election. The how are we going to bring something very different? A radical voter is one who gets, radical means the root of, right? So how do we get the root of the problem in our society? So the root is what we just went through. The Buddha taught us what the root of a society is. What does it come from? How do we create that root? How do we get at the root and root out what is there now that has led us to this point in time, this very challenging, difficult, fearful, grieving moment in time? So going back to the teachings, understanding what is it, what's the foundational root that makes a society that's kind to each other, that takes care of people in need. It's there in the teachings. The Buddha was clear, poverty leads to injustice. The people who don't share their wealth and redistribute it will have problems because we're creating an unjust society. And so getting back at the root of why we're here in this moment, understanding that we, as part of Buddhists, we are in a movement. We are reclaiming our moral compass in this election. I'll stop there. Thank you for listening. I invite us to let all that go, let it go into the earth, the water, the wind, the fire, and the space. We listen to a sound of the bell.